Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another News and Focus podcast. It's Thursday, and David, you found an article for us today from where?
Salon.com. As liberal a site as you're ever going to find.
Salon.com. What a name. You get your hair done there.
Apparently.
Not David.
We tend to go to the barbershop, but yes, other people go to salons. Yeah, this, I found it on... Yeah, Bill, I think you use Flipboard too, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah, and it gives you a lot of different things that you're interested in, and this story came up, and we will not agree with her on much, but I thought her perspective on this was kind of interesting because I think she raises some good points, and then at other times you'll see her blazing liberal, you know, personality come flying through when she talks about Christians, but this tension between being a Christian and being a Republican. I think she raises some interesting points on that. So while we won't agree with the way she views it, I think she does raise some interesting points.
All right, let's get started.
All right, so the title is Christian Right Voters Get in Line Behind Trump Because Conservatism Has Always Been Their True Religion. Christian conservatives will back a reactionary over a believer every time because politics is their true religion. While many evangelical voters supported Donald Trump during the primary, most prominent evangelical leaders, with a few exceptions, balked, preferring candidates like Ted Cruz that offered a more convincing performance of piety, or at least knew the communion plate was for. But as the New York Times reported over the weekend, the Christian right is coming around at breakneck speed to back a thrice-married man who described his attempts to avoid STIs as his personal Vietnam. While the piece reports that some Christian conservatives, especially the women, are still uncomfortable with supporting Trump, but as anti-choice activist Marjorie Dannenfelser told the New York Times, it's more about rationality overcoming fears than anything else.
Feelings.
Anything else. Rationally choosing to support a candidate because he's better at advancing your wholly irrational anti-sex, anti-gay, anti-women agenda is the perfect distillation of Christian conservatism. But some are going a step further than that and pretending that Trump is one of their own. They love a convert because it's what their faith is all about. Ralph Reed of the Faith and Freedom Coalition told the New York Times, "Of course, you'd have to be the most naive person alive to think that Trump is actually a convert to the conservative Christianity that the religious right claims fuels them."
Okay, so that's a sentence that we would agree with, right, Dave?
Oh, yeah. My goodness, yes. Yeah, I think she nails it. I came across a guy yesterday on Facebook, and you know, I've heard the opposite, but he actually had up there that I can't believe if you were a Christian, you won't vote for Donald Trump. You know?
Well,
you know? Yeah, he's a little off the reservation, but, you know, I think she's on to something here in that, and we're not talking about the church here. You know, I think that's the key point, is that this conservative Christian label that gets thrown around in politics is not necessarily the church. Now, there may be some church members in that group, but that's not the church. And so equating conservative Christianity with the Republican Party has kind of been the party line. And so all these people say, well, I'm a Christian voter. Well, you're really not a Christian voter. You know, it's like those people that say they have a Christian worldview, but they support abortion and they support gay marriage and they support everything else. So you don't really have a Christian worldview. You have a selective Christian worldview. And you know, when you think about Christianity and politics, I think that's exactly what it's morphed into.
You almost have to distinguish, David, between a Christian worldview and a biblical worldview.
Right. Especially when you're talking Christian and Western context.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, because everybody in the United Methodist Church that's currently having this giant battle for the life of the church would say they have a Christian worldview. You know, the 111 preachers that came out of the closet in the Methodist Church would say they have a Christian worldview.
Yeah.
And they're just simply redefining the biblical text.
I don't understand the the preceding paragraph or a couple before where it talks about, you know, irrational, anti-sex, anti-gay. If anti-gay wasn't in the sentence, I would think that that's what she meant by anti-sex. But I don't, you know, if there's any...
I don't know what she's talking about, but I'm not anti-sex.
No, I'm not anti-sex.
or anti-woman.
Right.
But that's the accusation against conservatives, right, is we're anti-women, but we're not the ones letting people into bathrooms. So,
right, or the ones letting men who used to be women be a woman of the year. How in the world? How can a woman measure up to a man who's a woman?
Yeah. Or a woman that used to be a man break a woman's face in a woman's UFC, MMA fight?
Right.
Yeah.
But somehow we're the anti-woman.
And now that woman.
What are you talking about that fight, David? I don't know that. What is that?
There's Fallon, Fallon Fox is a transgender fighter, and born a man, has gone through hormone therapy, sex reassignment, whatever, and to be a woman, and now she fights in the UFC and fought a woman and destroyed her because he's a man, you know, because he's still built like a man. Got some breast implants, but other than that, is built like a man.
Yeah, said the grip was different, still has a man's grip. Yeah.
Fractured her orbital bone, smashed her face in.
Wow.
You know, and so what's to stop that from going on? Well, what's to stop a man from going and playing in the WNBA or wherever else?
Right, you know? Or stop a woman from going into combat, which we would say is not the proper the proper way to treasure a woman, but we're anti-women.
Yes.
Very strange.
Mm. I'm just excited my NBA career is still alive.
You might have a shot now. You're going to have to sacrifice some other things, but...
Like a job.
It might not be worth it. Yeah, it might not be worth it to go play in front of 12 people. You did it just too.
I might get a Spalding shoe contract.
Yeah, there you go. The pony.
But the sentence was, of course, you'd have to be the most naive person alive to think that Trump is actually a convert to Christianity. So David, do I have to think he's a convert in order to vote for him? Or can I just vote for him and knowing that he's just a unsaved man? Is that okay for me to vote for an unsaved man?
Yeah, I think that's a totally different discussion. I think the thing that she's hitting on here is the Christian conservatives, you know, overwhelming desire to you know, polish up a turd, as it were, right? Like, I mean, we're going to try to make this thing look really Christian.
That's a good metaphor, right?
That's kind of, you know, lipstick on a pig. You know,
after you said what she was trying to hit on, I thought that was a good pun already.
Yeah, there you go. I'm rolling today. Yeah. But I think that's the problem that she has, and I think we would have too, is, you know, if you want to vote for him, vote for him.
Right.
But stop trying to shove this down my throat that he's some sort of conservative Christian, because he's probably neither, you know.
Right. Right.
But there has to be a point where we say this person is, while we are okay voting for someone who's not a Christian, there also has to become a point where I think this is maybe, is it, why are Christians even entertaining the idea of voting for this guy? Why are they getting behind him wholesale? Because he seems, while at least Ted Cruz is closest, that makes sense. But Donald Trump is the furthest from the Christian ideal.
Yeah, I think the reason we're doing that, Joey, or considering doing it, or struggling with it, is because we positively do not want Hillary.
Positively.
Do not want Hillary to be the next president of the United States. And we realize that a vote for Mickey Mouse is a vote for Hillary.
Right.
Yeah. And so it is a legitimate thing we have to consider. And I think that's, like I said, I think that's a separate conversation. This whole idea of trying to, you know, make him look like something he's not. It makes Christians look ridiculous. And so, you know, you say, well, I'm a Christian. Well, what do you believe in? Well, obviously, your beliefs and your convictions aren't that important because you're willing to say that this guy fits into your camp. You know, if you're a Christian, you want to vote for him, vote for him. But just say, listen, I don't really like this, and this, but I think he's a better alternative than Hillary. But don't try to say, you know, I think he fits well in our evangelical camp. I mean, that it's just a flat-out lie. You know, it's trying to stab your conscience for some way, knowing because you feel, you know.
Well, it's because you think you have to vote for a Christian.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not the first time we've hooked our wagon to this idea, because as far back as I can remember, my whole life, if you're conservative, then you have to try to paint the candidate as a Christian.
Yeah.
And if you're a Christian, then you have to be conservative. I mean, obviously, that's the case, because if you've got a two-party system and you look out there and you see, okay, well, those liberals are as far away from the Bible as can be, you know, then you can't say, well, I'm going to run over there and vote for them, unless you're in the South and you just always vote a Democrat, you know.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, it's kind of almost like we have to vote conservative, because so far in history, and it may not continue after Trump, so far in history, they have been the closest and held the closest to what a biblical worldview would be. But we go one step beyond that and try to paint it and hook them so tightly together that you would think that every conservative is a Christian and every Christian is a conservative.
Right.
And that's just simply has been kind of a bet of our own making.
Yeah, and she's going to mention Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan as a parallel, which I think there's somewhat of a parallel there in this election compared to that. But there's on what Jonathan was saying, there's a reason that there's never been an atheist president.
Sure.
It doesn't matter if they're Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal. Every one of them says they believe in God.
Yeah.
Every one of them says they're Christian in some way, shape, or form. I mean, there's never been, even if it was a Unitarian or whatever, there's never been one that's been elected that has just said, nope, I'm an atheist and I don't believe in God.
Yeah, there's a politician out in California that's avowing that he's a Satan worshiper.
Oh, there you go.
Right, and he's not getting any traction whatsoever, even in California.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, even in California. So.
What does Sanders claim?
I don't know what he claims.
He's an atheistic Jew.
Yeah, secular Jew. Yeah. So, I mean, even Hillary claims to be a Methodist.
Right.
You know, you know.
Methodist.
Yeah, and we're,
Does fit right now with the United Methodist Church
of
America.
Nancy Pelosi, you know, she's a good Catholic. Joe Biden's a good Catholic.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, they all try to affiliate themselves with a church because they know that there's something important there. They know there's some sort of intrinsic value there, but they don't, it's not their number one priority. And among some of these Christian voters, or maybe pseudo-Christian voters, they try to jam a square peg into a round hole.
Yesterday I was reading a Newsweek article to our class that the Roman Catholic Church in America spent $178 billion last year. Last year, $178 billion. I didn't think that was possible. But that's what it says. That's what the article says. And I thought, well, what if they're 10%?
What they spend it on?
I don't know.
That's just what that's their budget, basically, right?
In America.
Yeah, in America.
Yeah.
Almost $200 billion.
Yeah. And by comparison, now this is not profit, but it speaks to it. The Mormon Church 3 years ago cleared $6 billion. So you think about, you compare the powerhouse that the Roman Catholic Church still is, and you understand why some people are quick to say, well, I see resources there to be sure. Mm-hmm. Clearly, there are still some pretty well-off Catholic organizations, Catholics. And so to align yourself with the resources is probably where they're going with a lot of that.
And Catholics do a lot of good.
Sure.
I mean, that's where part of that money that you're talking about is, I mean, these homes, these
orphanages,
these hospitals, all the parochial schools where Catholic children are educated at half cost and subsidized by the church and all that. I mean, there's just, I mean, it's an entire industry, if you want to look at it that way, of people who have salaries. And by the way, not getting paid a whole lot of money either. You know, if you compare what a priest is going to make versus what a Southern Baptist of a large church is going to make, I mean, there's no comparison between those things. The guy gets to provide a little room at the place, you know. I mean, he doesn't have this...
The diocese.
Right. I mean, it's nothing special. You know, he doesn't have his own half-acre lot and a pool in the backyard and four-bedroom house and all that kind of stuff. It's a completely different scenario. All right, let's get back to the article.
Trump doesn't even bother pretending to know the basic lingo and seem unaware that Christians believe we are all sinners that need to ask for forgiveness. Everyone knows that, except for Trump. It's the most basic tenet of the faith, however imperfectly practiced by its followers. That's like not knowing that Muslims use the word Allah to refer to God, or not knowing that Jesus died on the cross. Trump likes waving the Bible around, but it's clear that the gesture is similar to when he ate a taco bowl as outreach to Hispanics.
I can do that outreach.
I have a different opinion on that picture. I think he was trolling everybody with that picture. I don't think he was actually trying to reach Hispanics by eating a taco bowl. He had that same grin on his face in that picture too.
Whatever the intention is, the message sent is clearly one of contempt for people Trump clearly believes are beneath him. But Christian conservatives will all vote for him anyway, because their religious fervor has never really been about Jesus or God, but about politics. Religion has always been a fig leaf, used to justify otherwise unjustifiable assaults on reproductive rights, gay rights, and even the education system.
Have you ever agreed with somebody at the first part of a sentence and then the comma changes everything? Yeah. That's about what that one was.
It's impossible to imagine that Trump is a legitimate convert to the Christian faith, but it's inarguable that he's a legitimate convert to the Christian right's true faith, which is reactionary politics. On Monday night, Samantha Bee, on her show Full Frontal, did an amazing segment that was an education that was as educational as it was hilarious. In it, she notes that the Christian right has always been about politics, not faith, starting with the fact that it was really formed as a movement not because of religion, but to battle school desegregation in the South. And once it became politically toxic to be so openly racist, the movement shifted gears, making attacks on abortion the main cause.
Let's stop.
It's horrible history.
Right.
She goes from knowing that Jesus died on the cross to making Christianity about school segregation.
Yeah, well, yeah. Like I said, I think the premise is okay, but you see where she wants to aim her attacks at.
Right, David. But we do have, within the Baptist history, we do have a giant zit on our face.
You know? And those are Democrats.
But that's the problem, to say the religious right. Well, I would trace the religious right to Jerry Falwell and that group early 80s. That had nothing to do with the Dixiecrats and segregation in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, she's trying to trace it.
It's the opposite party. That wasn't the right.
Right.
You know, and so to make that connection is kind of...
She has to make that connection, though. But we want to draw a huge line in the sand.
Yeah.
And we say that those
also say that we follow Jesus. Yeah. And that goes way way back before America, maybe, I'm thinking. And to connect those two is also not a good thing at all. And I have to say that I think we've done it to a certain extent. Not we here in this room, but I think that the most outspoken people would be maybe replacement theologians who scream the loudest that America is, you know, the next great thing. And, you know, just it was formed in this liberty and this perfect blend of Christianity.
I had a Baptist church tell me yesterday that they're focused on missionaries in America because they're trying to help. They're part of this Reclaim America project. Yeah. It was a Baptist church.
Yeah, and I think I'm trying to remember where I was going with that thought when I started to talk. I don't know. Somebody else kick in while I'm thinking.
What I struggle to see with this, you know, after teaching through the Book of Acts this semester with my 8th grade Bible class, I don't see any demonstration in the first century of church activity where they were really getting that involved with what was going on in government. And it seems like we, as the American Christian, have said we have this responsibility to live righteously before God, go tell the world about Christ, baptize believers, and get involved in politics.
Right, and I think the answer to that would be that given the freedom that we have, we need to be good stewards of what we've been given. So when we consider Acts, there was no voting for anybody. It wasn't an option. That's why you don't see it there. There wasn't a possibility. But here, it is a possibility. It is. And so, here, we've been given that which they weren't given. And so, what do I do with anything that I've been given by God, whether it's my children, or my home, or my talents, or my freedoms, or my resources? What do I do with it? I steward it.
Yeah.
That's my response.
And I'm not saying we shouldn't vote, but what I've always struggled with, especially growing up, is finding how tightly, especially with, you know, what this author's perspective, that we're weaving together Christianity and politics.
Yeah, I think we've taken that. That's my concern.
I am all about the Christian voting with a biblical worldview when they are given the opportunity to vote. But how much do I need to be sharing articles on social media and getting involved in politics if I do have a biblical worldview?
Sure. And how do I, with a biblical worldview, really see a difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump? I mean, I have a hard time seeing a difference between the two.
All right, well, I will give you one. If Trump is honest, he showed us 11 possible candidates for the Supreme Court, all of which would be far superior than any that Clinton would choose. And recognizing the impact that those men will have, or women, for the next 30 or 40 years on the nation's policy, that is enough of a reason for me to say, you get my vote versus her. Okay? I don't think you're a Christian. I think if you don't repent, you're going to die and go to hell. But because I want the potential for more biblical decisions to be made by the Supreme Court and recognizing that the power that the court has, and David, there's no indication the court's going to get less powerful.
No. So it's possible Trump could be lying.
It is.
But it's not possible that Hillary's going to change her position.
It's also not possible that she's telling the truth.
Right. You know, exactly.
So that would be my retort. So yeah. Then what I would say to you, Brian, is the degree to which you choose to involve yourself in politics or communicate information on Facebook is the degree to which you think that is part of creating disciples. Because part of being a disciple is learning to think biblically. So if I can use this as an example of how to think in the current culture biblically, then I see it as a mechanism or a vehicle towards discipleship in the 21st century.
I would absolutely agree that, you know, just about anyone in this room, and hopefully our church would as well. But I don't think Christianity in America, Baptists in America, would share the same perspective.
I would agree with you, but that's the same Baptists that are asking Jesus in their heart and thinking that they're all set. So, I mean, we have giant problems, Brian, besides just that. But I'm just trying to suggest that there is a way that you can steward your vote,
right,
and there is a way that you can relate to current events and talk about it from a discipleship perspective.
I would also put forward the idea that there are some people that are just designed to do that. They enjoy politics, and they're going to... we all have to work. I mean, God has given us that mandate, and they're going to work in politics, just like someone's going to work in the steel mill. Someone's going to be a pastor. Someone's going to mow grass. I mean, we've all been designed differently, and I may not really enjoy politics, but some people live off that sparring
negotiate. Well, John, Wilberforce felt he had a call to change Great Britain as much as Paul had a call to be the apostle to the Gentiles. And it seems, based on history, that was exactly correct, that God did put him in that spot and did call him to exercise that stewardship of what he was given, the resources, the privilege, the white privilege, the position that he had and all that. And how did he use it? He used it to stop a giant blight on the church.
Yeah.
And it was a blight on the church because the Church of England sanctioned it. And those same Church of England priests and leaders, and they came to America and continued to sanction it in Virginia and Massachusetts and on and on.
Yeah, I think what Joey was saying about the worry about this Christian politics getting meshed together, I think that's the thing that I can respect somebody that attacks pseudo-Christianity and hypocritical Christianity, because I'm all for that. Let's weed that out. But the problem is the church gets lumped in with this group, and so, Christians are hypocrites. Christians are trying to vote for Donald Trump. Christians are trying to get... Well, I don't think people that think with a biblical worldview are doing that at all. You know, we're not doing that in this room. You know, we're looking at this at a totally different angle, but I think her attacks on this Christian politics is a legitimate criticism because of what it's become in this country.
Right. Go ahead, Joey.
Would Quakers have voted?
Probably not.
Are you thinking about becoming a Quaker? Do you like
I'm
the
not, I'm not thinking about becoming a Quaker.
They wouldn't have served in the military.
But I'm thinking about a group of people. I'm thinking about a group of people who had a huge impact on the society that they lived in. And yet they recognized that just because I have a right to something doesn't mean, or I have a privilege to something, doesn't mean that I always take advantage of the privilege.
And that's why I told you last week via email that if a parishioner in my congregation says, do I have to vote, I would say to them, as a Baptist, I respect your conscience. And so if your conscience does not give you the liberty of voting in this election, I fully respect that. I put that under, is it James, to him to know what to do, go on, do it, it's sin. And it may be sin for you, not for sin for me. That's how I understand it. Where's that? I found that, Bill.
417,
right. So there are things that I feel like that the Lord has laid on my heart that it would be sin for me just to lay at home and do nothing. We have in the city of Charlotte, the city council that made the bathroom bill the explosion that it is was elected by 8% of the residents of Charlotte. 8%. So in my Bible class of 30 students, I said, what's 8% of 30? 2.4. All right, so these three students make all the decisions for all of us. Are you guys okay with that? These three, well, does it have to be those three? That's what they said. They got it. They at 14 years old, they got it. You know? And so that's what I meant by the stewardship perspective.
And I'll be very engaged in the state and local level, but I don't know how engaged I can be on that.
And I respect that.
Presidential ticket.
I respect that.
And when was the last time a presidential candidate advanced the gospel in this country?
When I think about Bush picking Supreme Court justices, they let us down. So even for me, that's just it's just like
withdraw. I mean, we just utterly withdraw.
Well, I don't think you have to withdraw from the culture.
No, withdraw from engaging the politics. Yeah. Because I will tell you right now that converts have let me down. Sure. I think about two individuals that I really thought were saved, and I really thought I was making progress, and both of them have, quote, let me down. I mean, just totally let down. Do you have anybody that you've discipled in the last year, and you're just exasperated with what happened? I put hours into you.
And then there's the whole parenting thing. And
let's not even go down that road.
You know, I will tell you that when it comes to any form of leadership, it seems like it's a pretty regular thing that the people you're trying to lead will perform one level below you. So it seems like it. So if that's true, there are exceptions, but if it's true, I can't, you know, I might be able to bob and weave on little things, and one election say I can't vote, and the next election say I can vote. But it's going to be really hard for me to demonstrate what a responsible citizen is to my kids if I'm in and out year after year, election after election. Try to get my three kids, all of them teenagers now, trying to get them all to act like responsible citizens. Don't forget, when you're 18, do the responsible thing, you know, along with your my son, my selective service card or whatever we're calling it now, make sure that you also register to vote. Tell my daughters, make sure you register to vote. By God's grace, they won't have a selective service card, even though there's a subcommittee in the House that voted 32-30 to pass it. The House voted it down this week. But so our daughters are barely out of the draft. But along with those things, I want them to register to vote. I want them to get a job. I think there's things they have to do to be responsible citizens. I want them to go to stay in church. I want them to look for a wife in church. So if I want those things, then I have to practice those things and get crazy about it. So if it were just me in a vacuum, I could be maybe a little bit less static on my year-to-year commitment for elections. But when it comes to trying to demonstrate what a responsible Christian steward looks like, I think I have to be consistently voting.
Yeah, and I, like I said, I will be voting. I just won't be.
And for me, it's
in that one point.
You know, I have a connection to Christ that He maintains. Christ maintains my salvation, the connection, all of those things. But I also have another level to me, and that is some patriotism. And when I think about men and women who've gone before me, who've given their lives, it stirs something within me that's not Christianity. I'm not going to confuse it, but it is there. And when I think of people, when I think of the original patriots who did some things that maybe I might have disagreed with how they did it, but they stood up and they did it, and I enjoy freedoms because of it, I'm going to vote on that basis.
Sure.
To defend my freedom, to have freedom for the people who are coming after me.
Well, John, how...
If I get apathetic, it's not going to be there.
Right. Well, how is that any different, John, than the idea that I have this connection to Berean Baptist Church that started in 1987 when I showed up as a private, and then I recognized that the buildings that I was enjoying back there were built by people in the 70s and the 60s, and so... Not only do I have an affinity to the greater body of Christ and brothers and sisters everywhere, but I also have a very particular affinity towards this geographical location. And some people say it might be it's too much and all that, but this is a missionary sending, disciple making, gospel preaching center.
Right.
Well, I think we've lost that a little bit, because I will tell you, like, when you hear about millennials and things like this, you will hear, it's almost as if they have a greater affinity to the global church, in quotes, than the local church that actually would, you know, show up for their baby being born, visit you in the hospital, take you food when you need it, preach your funeral, on and on and on. And somehow the past generations have understood this connection. You know, the World War II generation understood that, you know, the things that people did, the sacrifices they made before me, I have to make those because every generation has to make these. Well, we're living in a society where we really don't have to make those yet. And so I think that's part of the issue.
And part of that is the digitization. This device right here is hurting that. This phone that I hold in my hand for our audio listeners. Because there used to be, this is my neighborhood. We take care of our neighborhood. You know, don't do this in our neighborhood. You know, those are almost gone. So I don't need to have a connection to a neighborhood or a local church or to my state. I'm from North Carolina. You know, those things are gone because I have this digital connection.
Citizens of the world now.
Yeah. Right, right, exactly.
I would go even further back. I said the grocery store.
Game, where you build your city and get people to come. And
yeah.
World of Warcraft, is that what it is? Or
yeah, that's you're in the right track.
Clash of Clans.
Right. Yeah, Clash of Clans.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Everybody's, well, I don't know about now, but you know, you spend all these hours.
No, they still are. No, they still are.
Crazy.
Now you've done it.
Huh?
So like 5 or 6 years ago, I think it was Farmville.
Yeah,
one person more sends me a Farmville thing.
You can disable that.
I disable Facebook altogether.
There you go.
What a weirdo.
Stump plug.
I think some of this is just under the heading of do good. You know, Micah 6:8. You know, I don't know if I can find virtue in taking a Tuesday evening for an hour to go vote, but I think it might just go under the heading of just good. You know, doing something good.
All right. Let's see.
Last sentence of the page.
By the way, I disagree with her wholeheartedly, but Christian conservatives will all vote for him anyway. I think there are lots of Joeys. I think there are a lot of people.
The fake, you know, Christian conservatives will all vote for, you know,
yes.
ones that we're talking
about.
Well,
I think legitimate Christians are struggling with voting for him.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And many of them are going to sit home. And I believe that Clinton she has it.
Well, you know, the poll that came out today was that they're in a dead heat.
She's tied with him in Georgia, all places.
But
in Ohio and Michigan,
he's gaining ground.
But the thing is, it doesn't matter. Those polls mean nothing because it doesn't matter if he gets 51% of the vote. It matters where he gets the vote.
Right.
With the Electoral College, it doesn't matter because California's going to Hillary and Illinois is going to Hillary and New York's going to Hillary and you know that she's got all that.
All of New England is going to.
So
to
if
her.
You don't get Ohio, if you don't get North Carolina, if you don't get Virginia, if you don't get Florida, you're not winning.
Right.
So it really comes down to like 4 states. You know, 4, 5, 6.
Isn't that amazing?
Maybe Colorado. You know, I think the Electoral College has outrun its usefulness, but that's really what it's come down to now. Because it doesn't matter. 50-50 means nothing. It's all in these particular states.
Sure, and that's why the fact that she's tying them in Georgia is so. Because those are states that you can count on winning everything but Florida, and then Florida's kind of a toss up.
Yeah.
And now you can't even count on that in a state like Georgia, North Carolina.
All right, as B notes, who is B?
The lady on the
Samantha
B,
the lady that she rented, was called. Mentioned.
She rented her?
As B notes, this politics, not faith aspect of the religious right was immediately secured in their first real incursion into national politics when they backed the divorced Hollywood rich guy, Ronald Reagan, over someone who's quite clearly a sincere born-again Christian, Jimmy Carter. Since then, the parties have realigned somewhat with Republicans, mostly learning to perform the customs of evangelical Christianity, even when they are Catholic like Paul Ryan or Rick Santorum, while Democrats have adopted a more secular aesthetic, speaking about religion more sparingly, even when they are regular churchgoers.
I guess my question, how do you know, why do they get to be the judge that Jimmy Carter is a sincere born-again?
Yeah.
How would you even know what a sincere born-again Christian
is? And I love
like?
The next, one of those regular churchgoers, in fact, is Hillary Clinton. Yeah, Hillary Clinton is a regular churchgoer.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Well, I heard today on the radio, or on the 5-minute worldview thing. I don't know if you guys ever listened to that on Sermeo, but it's the worldview in 5 minutes. It's pretty good. And United Methodist Church was 17 million members, 3 million go to church. Okay? So she fits that That's where we're at here. That's
17%.
Yeah, you don't get to call yourself a member.
Yeah, I don't think they know what member means.
Right.
They keep using that word.
But the reason she doesn't speak about religion very much is because there are people she doesn't want to lose.
Yeah.
She has a lot to lose.
She knows her constituency. She knows she doesn't need to do that. She keeps this kind of facade over here on the side, whereas Trump feels like the need to kind of try to do this, and his supporters do the same thing. So he goes to Liberty and says 2 Corinthians and sounds like an idiot and says, I've never needed to ask forgiveness for anything. And, you know, but I really like this Jesus guy. He's a huge guy and I really like him. You know, it's interesting how the different approaches are on both sides.
One of those regular church goers is, in fact, Hillary Clinton. She doesn't speak about religion very much, but she's uniquely devout Methodist who, unlike her Republican opponent, speaks knowledgeably about faith when called upon to do something.
So Jimmy Carter's a sincere born-again Christian, and she's a genuinely devout Methodist.
Right. And
speaks knowledgeably about faith.
Yeah.
Well, compared to Donald Trump, she might.
Maybe.
I think that's her point there. I haven't heard Hillary say much about the faith.
No.
Never.
I don't even know
she's never been called upon to do so.
No. That's right. But she's when she does, because she doesn't do those interviews. She's like, not talking to those people.
Yeah, Democrats don't expect them to be Christians.
Which means that 2016 is a redux of the 1980 election when it comes to religion, to which we would all say, are you kidding me?
Right. Yeah you're going to compare even Hillary Clinton to Jimmy Carter as a joke. The man speaks openly about his conversion with Jesus Christ in public. Yeah.
He's certainly gone off the rails a little bit, but it's very clear that he took his faith very seriously.
And he openly in public said Jesus is the only way.
But the thing
no one else is going to heaven.
The thing
I watched him say that.
That's passed.
Yeah. No. Last year on an interview I saw him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
Because he's talking on both sides of his mouth. He's really struggling right now. But that's very common.
Right.
Billy Graham's doing the same thing. I mean, that it just seems like this. As these guys get old, they really...
Well, Jimmy Carter struggles with the women's issue because, you know, he wrote a book on, you know, how they're oppressed and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But at that interview, he said, you know, the guy tried to get him in a corner and say, now, do you believe Jesus is the only way to heaven? He said, yes, I believe Jesus. And so that means no one else, yes, they're not going to heaven. And, you know, he was soft-pedaling it, but at the same time, he said that. I mean,
can't get all the Southern Baptists out of him, I guess.
No.
Because he's very sympathetic on the LGBT thing. Sure, he's sympathetic to Muslims. He's... Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of different things there. So maybe he's got a different twist on that.
Yeah, he's remarkably liberal as an SBC guy.
Yes.
Just incredibly liberal.
He's like the one they kicked out.
This lady is divorcing faith from works. Because what she's saying is that Hillary Clinton is a real churchgoer. She does true religion. And yet true religion is not just believing something and showing it. True religion is protecting people that need to be protected. It's
right. But Joe, you need to understand that as a United Methodist, the way I protect people is I affirm your right to choose your own identity.
Right.
The way I protect you is I give you an opportunity
to
be...
Except for the child and the woman never gets to choose their identity.
Yeah. I give you the opportunity to be a gay preacher. That I'm
women's reproductive rights.
That's the new gospel.
Right. Absolutely. That they believe they're doing God's work, and more so than Baptists. I mean, our good friends that came from the United Methodist Church recently out in Lakeford, they gave me the bulletin in which the bulletin was bashing the Baptists and showing how Methodists are better than Baptists because they are more loving, they are more inclusive, that Jesus would be just as inclusive today. I mean, so they're doing their religion. Hillary believes she's living out her faith. It's a different faith, but
that's why the answer is addressing the gospel, not these political things. We have to keep telling the message that that is not the gospel. You know, not judging people is not the gospel. There is judgment coming. That's the gospel.
Yeah. So I say politics is not the answer. Christ is. I'm voting because I've been given the privilege to vote, and I want to steward that privilege as long as I have it. That's it. I'm not voting because I think the government is the answer, because I don't think it's the answer. I'm just voting because that's the way I think I should steward it. End of discussion. Yeah. Christ is the solution.
Right, and the presidency is not about which one's the best Christian. It's about which one would make the best president.
at the given time
yeah.
Of the choices that I've been presented. Because right. Mickey Mouse is not an option.
I don't think he is. No.
He's going to need a lot of write-in votes.
Yeah, he's weak on foreign policy, too.
There's a little like boy
here. He's very pro LBGT.
What about the pitch on his voice? Yeah. What would Putin do with that?
Yeah, all right.
Instead, the conservative Christians who claim that faith drives their voting...
Maybe you skip these two paragraphs.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Did I really?
Yeah, yeah, which means...
You stopped there.
The redux one, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So a devout Christian versus someone whose personal history falls short of ideas of the Christian right and has around marriage and sexuality. So Hillary's the devout Christian.
Yeah, Hillary's the devout Christian in this equation, yeah.
Wow. And just to add another layer of irony to it, Clinton's marriage has quite famously hit some infidelity obstacles, but she did exactly what the conservative church would generally prefer in these. She stayed with her husband.
It's hit some infidelity obstacles. Yeah. That's like saying, you know, the Grand Canyon's a little bit of a hole over there.
Yeah. Like watching a soccer game's exciting.
Yeah. Whoa, taking a shot. I usually do that.
And the reason she forgave Bill Clinton is because she wanted to be a good Christian and follow Christ.
Yeah. Because the gospel demands that she does. Yeah.
There was no political expediency in that whatsoever.
To run for office.
Yeah.
No.
But
no.
she said that the next statement I think is pretty true because she writes there should be no doubt that if Clinton were the Republican and Trump was the Democrat, Christian conservatives would be decrying him for his adultery while holding out her story of forgiveness and marital redemption as a reason to vote for her. Now, again, we're talking about the political Christians. That they would absolutely be raking Trump over the coals for his, you know, dirtbaggery, whatever however you want to call it.
Sure. They are selectively blind.
Yes.
You know, and you know what? As mystified as I am about everyone not thinking about Benghazi, the indictment she won't get for her email kerfuffle. We should be as easily as mystified over, you know, no one is saying anything about Trump's inability to do anything. It ranges in close proximity to marital fidelity.
Yeah.
There should be no doubt if Clinton were the Republican, Trump was the Democrat, the situation would be reversed. And that's true.
Yeah.
She's right. Yeah. Instead, the conservative Christians who claim that faith drives their voting behavior will be voting for Trump, not Clinton.
But again, it's not because of their marriage or lack thereof.
And again, it's not like we're choosing a non-Christian over a Christian.
Right.
I mean, that's the false dichotomy that she's setting up with this argument.
Yeah. She makes it sound like because Hillary stayed with Bill that, oh, yeah.
And she's a United Methodist.
Right.
Yeah, you can criticize us for voting for Trump, but don't criticize us for voting for Trump over Hillary.
Right.
That's a ridiculous, you know, argument.
Yeah, great point.
All right. If anything, the Trump campaign represents a return to the roots of the Christian right, which, as B notes, started out as a racist movement that was focused mostly on school.
So 1980.
And the Democrats.
Yeah, it's funny because she moved from that to abortion rights because, you know, that's exactly what it was. Is it went from segregation in the 80s, which had been gone for since the
60s. Yeah, that's the point. It's not even.
And we couldn't be racist anymore, so we decided to go after abortion after that.
But
even though that was
authors are permitted to publish nonsense like this, David, because of the sheer ignorance that permeates our society.
Yeah, and people just eat it up. Oh, yeah, that's right. They were part of this. They were saying
and if you debated this lady on national television, she would just yell and scream and talk over you. As you were trying to... That was 1980. Segregation was in the 60s.
Yeah, maybe 84.
Something
different. I
didn't know
you would say 80. Really,
it was completely
84.
Different. It was and you wouldn't get anywhere.
Yeah.
No one would care because they've already made up their mind anyways.
Yes.
And that's why it takes a supernatural change through the preaching of the gospel.
Right. The issue with Carter and why Reagan won had very little to do with Reagan. It had everything to do with the Iran-Contra affair and the degree to which he botched that up royally. That was
the economy was terrible.
Right.
The gas rationing. Yeah, I mean,
it was an abject
failure as a president.
Right.
You know? Yeah, and you know, the point of this article, or her point of this article, is that the racist underpinnings of the Christian right or what's driving the vote. Well, that's not really... If she really wanted to call out our idolatry as a conservative group and, as quote, in Christians, it would be the economy and the strength of the military and the protection, our perception that we need somebody strong in office, those, I would think, would be more legitimate claims to behind the Christian right than anything
and
else.
Did we put side by side the people from the Democratic Party that ran for president this time beside the ones that ran for president on the Republican side? We had African Americans, we had Hispanics, we had, you know, you name it across the board. You know what the Democrats had? Old white people. That's all they had. And so to say, you know, the racist underpinnings of the Christian right. Well, the racist underpinnings of the Christian right loved Ben Carson and loved Marco Rubio and loved Ted Cruz, you know, and had a woman there, Carly Fiorina, you know, over and over and over again. So it's this narrative again.
Sure, and the racist underpinning of the Christian right helped to abolish slavery were Republicans.
Yeah.
I mean, let's remember, Lincoln was, what we would say was, even if we're not 100% sure about his faith, he was at least a deist who believed in God and wanted to free slaves. So it's another attempt to rewrite.
Well, I'm tweeting her right now.
Yeah.
Well, she also did a review of the Avengers the other day that was just horrendous. So she's on my bad list already.
You know, something I just heard that Captain I didn't realize. You know, and I'm sure Bill and others. You
is
can,
he real? Go ahead.
You can,
Bill Sturm.
You can, of course, expand this, but Jehovah's Witness. Now, I don't know about here in America, but this report was about them. They that were in Russia, they're not allowed to vote. They're not allowed to hold public office. And I think in Russia, so they're considering taking away their privileges too, because they say they're not part of the society. And so, I mean, that's a whole other thing about the stewardship. If you're not willing to vote, but then you want to go down and say, protect me, military. You want to go down and say, hey, help me out in time of trouble. I mean, there's a disconnect in this idea of you give and take and I work so that other people can have it when they need it. And so, I mean, there's something there. Because at first I was like, well, you're going to take away their citizenship? Well, they're not acting like citizens.
And that's why I think, Paul and Kyle, one reason you pay taxes is because you're doing good in the light, in your mind, in their minds, you're doing something good by paying taxes. They can't say that you're not trying to be a productive member of society if you're paying taxes. I mean, right? You give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. Because if now all of a sudden it's a blot against you. You're not even involved. You're not even paying the money for this. So there is we have to be involved. I guess the question is, in my mind, at what point does my punching the ticket for Trump become even whether I like it or not, even if I recognize that he's not a Christian and he's not even close to being a Christian, at what point in this lady's mind and other people like her does it become another opportunity for them to say, look at what you Christians are doing with this guy? That's where my struggle is. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that she's going to know whether you vote or not.
No, she's not. But as a whole, the longer that we continue to perpetuate the problem and being pragmatic and voting for people who aren't, you know, right?
Okay, what's the alternative, Joe? Are you going to sit out?
No, I don't know. I'm not saying.
Because I pay taxes.
I do too.
I think.
No, I pay a lot of taxes.
I'm sure you do.
A crazy amount.
I think that one of the, it's almost a win-win situation, I think, because if you vote for, if you vote for Trump and he ends up turning out to be a liar and undoes the party and the party fractions, you know, into two parts at least, it's a purification process for next time. And maybe we won't go through this again. Maybe we won't pick such a candidate again, reactionary. If he doesn't turn out to be a liar and he ends up being actually conservative and fending off liberalism another 4 years or whatever, then that's a win too. I mean, it's not as much of a win as we'd like, but it's better than Hillary. I mean, just my two cents.
Yeah, I don't know that not voting helps fix the problem.
Seems like it just shoves us down the path of socialism and.
Because that's the road we're on.
Atheism, yes, even more, faster.
If I could,
children,
right.
Which people don't understand anyway.
Worst position.
You know. Bernie Sanders isn't a socialist, he's a democratic socialist. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
That's
a little better.
Right.
Once you throw a democratic on something, it sounds pretty nice. You know, I like that.
Kind of the idea people vote about which kind of socialism they want when you're in office.
Yeah, nobody can even define
it. Anybody who believes in total freedom believes in socialism anyway.
The sheer ignorance is what is absolutely just killing our nation state. And I want to turn the listener on to a great research source, and it's Prager University, P-R-A-G-E-R University. And look at these YouTube videos. I told my wife that we were going to watch one every day together and have a conversation based on what 5 minutes. We can find 5 minutes a day to look at something and keep ourselves educated, keep ourselves more aware, force ourselves to be part of the small minority of Americans who knows what's happening. I watched one on fossil fuels, and it was just incredibly excellent. And it's a great resource for Sunday school teachers, for Awana workers, for Christian school teachers. I mean, the idea of taking the Bible and showing its relevance to everyday living, because that's our job. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not just trying to create intellectual giants who know everything and we got the Westminster Confession inside and out. They actually can apply the Scripture. Phenomenal 5-minute resource. And really done well.
Yeah, actually, believe it or not, old boy over here sent me one about baseball the other day. I was like, man, that was good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, and I think it was the real game. I don't think it was fantasy baseball. I thought it was about the real game.
They didn't have soccer games on it.
No. Bill, I must ask your forgiveness for the shot across the bow about the soccer.
So
he flopped out of his chair, and we're just gonna yell at him.
And bought a scarf.
That's right, and a vuvuzela.
So fossil fuels, the greenest energy. 576,000 views, 5 minutes long.
Right,
the one. Yeah,
yeah, it's just excellent. It was just really good. So
yeah, they do a good job.
So the reason she can write this nonsense and put it on a website and people read it is because they don't know history, David.
Sure.
They don't know that the racists of the 1960s were Democrats, and the religious right of the 1980s, almost 90s, David, were Republicans, and that they were dealing with two totally different issues. Yeah. And anybody that's a true Christian should readily stand up and say, we were on the wrong side of the fence as a Baptist denomination in the South for about 100 years. Bill, about 100 years.
Sure.
We were on, when white churches were helping build black churches so that they didn't worship together, we were on the wrong side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we need to own up to that. We need to say, we messed up. We allowed economics. We allowed materialistic ideology to dictate our...
And worship styles.
Right, worship styles.
They
sure.
Want to be with that.
No, not at all. We wanted them to go worship separately, and that's why we have today an African-American gospel and the true gospel. That's why we have that today, because their gospel led to their deliverance. And in many regards, we are still reaping the judgment of God because of that sin.
Right, and we held that to the gospel that had the true deliverance because we wouldn't allow them deliverance in our land, and we said we had the gospel.
Well, I think T4G, we kind of got a kind of an education at that when they talked about the reason. I think you brought it up too in a podcast. Maybe it was you first, but talked about how, you know, really what was the impetus for those other churches was voting membership, and how you couldn't be having, you know, my slave has a vote, and I have a vote in a congregational church.
You know, it becomes a leveling.
Right.
And we're not going to have a level playing field.
Right.
So move them to their own church and let them make their own decisions over there. And we withheld the true gospel to them from Jonathan, because how can we talk to them about a gospel that delivers you and we're not willing to deliver them?
Yeah, it's Animal Farm, right? All animals are created equal, but some are more equal than others.
Sure.
And, you know, the discussion that followed right after the emancipation was whether they were going to vote, and that goes to the whole thing. I mean,
when did the three-fifths thing go away, though? When they were three-fifths?
Well, after the Civil War.
Yeah.
That was more of a population.
So they could vote, but then there were poll taxes. And all these other
black
obstacles,
codes, Jim Crow laws, yeah,
that keep them.
Sure. What is the movie that everyone should watch, David?
Yeah.
So, I actually just watched it with the AP U.S. History class.
Right, just incredibly excellent movie.
That's the 1960s.
Yeah, talk about your education.
Right.
I didn't even realize that until I watched that movie.
Just superb movie.
Yeah, and they're honest. You know, Lyndon Johnson is painted pretty accurately, and George Wallace is painted as the horrible person he was, and
yeah,
even Martin Luther King is shown kind of warts and all in that movie. So I was impressed with it.
But again, if poll our student body and ask them how many have watched it. Ask your Sunday school class listener how many have watched it. We're not taking advantage of resources that are available to us. I'm thinking about Amazing Grace. I think about the Luther movie. There are plenty of good movies out there to watch. And you'll be amazed at the number of your students or people that aren't watching these resources that are available to them. And thus, this garbage is written and affirmed.
Well, if you get on a website like Salon.com, you know, your readers are going to eat this up because it's fueling their misconceptions already, and it's fueled by historical revisionism and fact-changing and everything else, and it fits their narrative. And so this is people; it's going to get hits all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's Romans all over it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if I vote for Trump on this day, don't be surprised if I'm in a bad mood that day. Yeah, you know?
Yeah, and I'm not voting for him because I think he's a Christian.
Right, absolutely. Nor do I think, I've said several times, I'm going to vote for him just to see if his big mouth can do half of what he claims he can do.
Yeah.
You know? Because, I mean, it's just, it's like a spew of garbage. You know, it's like vomiting. It's hard to turn this nation around. It's hard. How are we going to fix the problems? He's not going to fix them.
Thanks for listening. Have a great day.